Hey kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to Jumping Bomb Audio.
And welcome back to Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the wonderful world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. My name is Taylor, and I am joined, as always, by my very good friend and co-host, Kelly. Kelly, hello again.
Hello. The recording is on my end, and I'm very stressed about it.
Look, we've said it multiple times on this podcast. We have never had a week where the recording has gone wrong. We've never lost a recording. The fact that I'm saying it right now always makes me feel that I will jinx it.
Today's the day.
But it hasn't happened. So I feel confident. The system we have in place, which is now a different system, but only slightly, will work, and we will not lose this. The great thing is, if you're hearing us talking about this, it will sound stupid because you will know that we haven't lost it.
Yeah, unless we went back and recreated it in depth.
Yeah, we should record. The backup should be we should record and do like a speech to text thing.
There we go.
That will record the entire podcast. And if we ever lose a podcast, we will go back and read the script. The transcript of the lost podcast.
Yeah, I think that's good. Or what we could do is, you know, we don't even have to record podcasts. What we could do is train some AIs on the show, and then every episode we feed them our notes and just let the AIs go.
I mean, we have at least 100 hours of content. We could just feed that to an AI. They could replicate our voices. And just give our then they would know our opinions on things, so they could just give our opinions. But the great thing now is listeners don't know whether we're originally recording this podcast or if we're reading our transcript of a lost podcast.
Who knows? Who's to say? Who knows if it's even us?
Who's
Might
to say?
Be some and ghosts in the machine.
Right as you were saying that, you did slightly glitch, which on my end. Which did really give it the sense of the program not quite getting the, not quite getting every word of your AI voice.
Hopefully, it's not like the Seinfeld AI thing where it got canceled after the fake Jerry started talking about trans stuff.
Yes, we that will not be happening to us if I can help it.
Yeah, I mean, then you'll know it's
an AI. One of two people. Yeah,
you'll know it's an AI because we start saying extra wild things that get us canceled.
We got a lot to talk about on this show, a big Stardom show, a big Tokyo Joshi show, and also a lot of big shows coming up as Japan heads into Golden Week. But before we do that, we got to always do the plugs. You know we got to do the plugs. Follow us on Twitter at JBombAudio. You can follow Kelly at Comic Geek Kelly, and you can follow me at Tame Aimbow. Subscribe to this podcast on your podcast app of choice. And if that app of choice happens to be Apple Podcasts, we would really love a 5-star rating and review. And if you're feeling extra generous, you can donate to the show at redcircle.com/shows/jumping-bomb-audio. So let's get right into that, into this, not into that, into this. We are going to start with Stardom's Cinderella Tournament Finals from April 15th at Yoyogi National Gymnasium in front of 1,049 fans. Kelly, I will let you speak first. What did you think of this show?
Taylor, this was certainly a show that we watched. There was professional wrestling on it. There was a lot of competitors, and they had several matches.
I can't disagree with anything you've just said. You're very right. to me, it felt like a glorified house show.
Yeah.
In many ways.
Sure
a
did.
Glorified house show or a Road to Yokohama show. I think, and I saw some conversation about this in the Voices of Wrestling Discord, Cinderella Tournament this year felt very, I'm trying to think of what the best word, obligatory. It felt like something that was sort of
it was on
the
back
way.
Burner for sure.
Yeah. The promotion is very clearly focused on this big, giant Yokohama show, and it felt sort of like, who do we make Cinderella? Oh, we'll just do, spoilers, we'll just do Mirai again, because she won last year and whatever.
Rossi completely forgot about the tournament until he tripped over the trophy in his office, and he was like, oh shit, I had this made, I gotta use it.
Too busy booking the other tournament that they had going, the Trios tournament that they ran a month ago. But let's dive right into the show. Kelly, I don't believe either of us saw the match, but Aya Sakura went to a 5-minute time limit draw with Hanako. I didn't see that match. Did you?
Nope, but I bet it was 5 minutes long.
That's a good guess. And luckily, it fulfilled Stardom's quota of needing a time limit draw on every show. That would be great if they just have the rookies do time limit draws in the openers or the pre-shows.
Fine.
It's like drawing a vampire away, being like, oh, go attack this cow, vampire, and don't attack all these humans over here.
It punches like the draw card so Rossi can get his free sub.
Yeah. But in terms of matches we did see, the show opened with the first of two Cinderella Tournament semifinal matches. In the first semifinal, Mai Sakurai defeating Waka Tsukiyama in 5 minutes and 52 seconds. I know that this Cinderella Tournament, there was a lot of talk about Mai Sakurai really getting more fan connection, getting really developed. My one note on this match was I just really don't have any invested interest in Mai still.
No, I'm probably higher on her than you are at this point. I thought she was fine. I thought Waka was fine. It was sad to see Wakamania stopped in its tracks. I will say that the flipping leg drop that Mai did to close out the match looked awesome, and she absolutely nailed that. So that's cool. That was a cool finish. But overall, just kind of, it was an all right match. It was less than 6 minutes. I just went the gentlewoman's three.
She did land the leg drop very well and will avoid comparisons to another dangerous wrestler on the roster, because the first time she hit that leg drop, it looked very brutal, and this time it looked very good. So yeah. I'm assuming she practiced it and got better, which is a great thing to do. Good advice for all wrestlers, and maybe more specific, some wrestlers in Stardom.
Yep, definitely.
The next Cinderella tournament match was Mirai defeating Amisore in 11 minutes and 12 seconds. Here's another note I have. I wish that crowds would stop doing the claps, because when the three claps happen, the only thing I hear in my head is COVID claps to the rhythm of the claps. Like, it's like a trigger for me of like, this was a thing that happened because of COVID and I want it to stop. Because I'm like, now that, you can cheer. Now yeah. You can cheer. You don't have to do the claps. Just do some cheers. But another match that I thought was perfectly fine and really had no other thoughts about.
Yeah, it took a while for me to get into it, but I thought they both worked pretty hard. And by the end, I thought it was pretty good. This was 3.25 for me.
The next match was a 6-person tag team match. The Club Venus trio of Mina's Women, Mariah May, Xena, and the newly debuting Jesse, defeating the Stars team of Hazuki Koguma and Momo Kogo. This might have been my favorite match on the show. I thought it was really fun. Helps going against Hazuki and Koguma. But I've enjoyed Club Venus. I think Mariah is clearly the best one. Good seeing some more Xena and Jesse. But a fun, 3.25 match that I enjoyed.
Yeah, I'm about the same. I thought it was fun. It went by pretty quick. Jesse, I don't know who she is. Like, I'd never seen her work prior to being in Stardom. I guess she was in NXT for some time, but apparently not when I was watching.
She was like a long time NXT person in that when she debuted, it's one of those people where I don't know if I recognize her or she just looks like a lot of other wrestlers.
Yeah.
Where I was sort of like, I think I know her, but I couldn't ever have told you, like, oh, she was the person who did this, or she was the person in NXT who was whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I couldn't give you a single thing, but I'm like, I feel like I recognize her, but I don't know if I'm being deceived.
She does look vaguely familiar. Like, she may have, we probably just saw squashes she was in, or like, oh, there's a brawl, we need some geeks to go out there and break it up, that kind of stuff.
Or you're like on Twitter and someone who's in NXT who you know, like, takes a picture.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I'm having a great time here in Florida. And like, she's in the photo, but you don't really, so you don't know her, but you sort of see the face.
Yeah.
Continuously, and you're like, oh, yeah, it's that person.
Yeah, you see it enough times and you're like, oh, okay, I know who this is, but you really don't.
Also, she looked huge in the match. I don't know if it's just because everyone on Stars is very small, but she looked very tall, and I don't know how tall she actually is.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Was that just a me thing, or did you notice that?
She did look taller. Like, I don't think she's very tall. Like, I would assume she's probably average height.
Oh,
by
well,
U.S. standards.
Well, she's, I mean, according to prowrestling.fandom.com, she is 5'9".
Okay.
Which would mean she's taller than Himeka.
Wow.
Himeka is 5'8".
That's always just so wild to me because I assume Himeka is like 6'5".
Yeah. But that's wild. I mean, now I don't know where this, I don't know what the citation for this 5'9" is. If it was like a WWE build.
Probably.
5'9", or if it was, I don't know what else it would be.
Someone stole her wallet and looked at her driver's license.
But 5'9", and it's on Cage Match as well. 5'9". She was in NXT for 5 years.
Jeez.
She was in NXT for 5 years.
She is racking up those Angela Dawkins years.
Oh, she wrestled in Evolve twice.
Oh.
Oh, no, three times.
Oh, was that like the era when they were putting it, some of it on the network?
Well, she has a match from 2018. When did the WWE stuff start?
Oh, that was probably around
there. I think it was after that.
Okay.
Because she wrestled on Evolve 114, October 2018, losing to Priscilla Kelly.
Yeah, that sounds right.
In a singles match. Oh, yes, it was the WWE time because the tag title match on that show was the Street Profits versus Doom Patrol.
Makes sense. That was the
episode. That was okay. The show where the Street Profits won the Evolve tag titles.
Yeah, so they just sent a whole bunch of NXT people there.
Yeah, and I guess they were like, oh, we have Priscilla Kelly, just send us one single woman.
Yeah.
And then she had, that was it in 2018, and then she had two matches in Evolve in 2020, early 2020.
I'm going to guess they were against Brandi Lauren and Shotzi Blackheart.
Now, Brandi Lauren, they weren't against Brandi Lauren, Brandi Lauren is right. The first one, her sole Evolve victory was against a character named Alex Sky, who I have never heard of before.
No, no clue.
Oh, looks like, she hasn't wrestled in 2 years. That would be why. The loss was her only tag team match, teaming with Brandi Lauren as the In Crowd, according to Cage Match, losing to Avery Taylor and Natalia Markova, who I believe is now an NWA wrestler.
Yeah, she's was she the one that they turned into My Valentine? Or is that someone
else? No, she's a different one.
Oh,
She's a separate woman.
Oh.
From My Valentine. And Avery Taylor is Avery Taylor is JC Jane.
Oh, the other one that was with Priscilla Kelly in NXT.
JC Jane is, a member of Toxic Attraction.
Yeah, which I don't think is a thing anymore.
Well, there were three members in it, and one of the members was fired. Or what was it? Mandy Rose, she quit? She was fired?
Yeah, she was showing her butt too much on the internet. And they were like, we need a cut of that. And she's like, fuck you, and then left.
Because that was Gigi Dolan, JC Jane, and Mandy Rose, and now, of course, Mandy Rose is gone.
Yeah, and I think the other two are feuding.
Possibly. I don't watch NXT, so I couldn't tell you.
I just remember seeing the gif of Priscilla Kelly getting her head, like, stomped into a door, and it looked like it fucking hurt.
But anyway, that's the history of Jesse, single name Jesse, who is now in Stardom.
Yep.
Anyway, the next match was a 12-person tag team match. The Oedo Tai team of Momo Watanabe, Natsuka Tora, Rina, Ruaka, Saki Kashima, and Starlight Kid defeating the Queen's Quest team of Azumi, Hina, Lady C, Miyu Amasaki, Saya, and Utami in 10 minutes and 47 seconds. This was really the match where my opinion on this feels like a house show to me really solidified. This felt like a get people on the show, go out there and just have a match.
Yeah, this was a nothing match.
The next match was another 6-person tag team match. The Neo Stardom Army of Nanai Takahashi, Yuna Mizumori, and Yu defeating the Stars team of Hanan, Mayu Iwatani, and Saya Ida in 11 minutes and 46 seconds. I like the double dive off the stanchion.
Yeah, that was cool.
For the Stars team, I was like, oh, that's fun. That's a fun thing. Also, it sort of bums me out to have Yuna as sort of the faceless third member of this Neo Stardom Army team.
But Taylor, she has a tiny hat.
That she does, and that's what wrestling is all about.
Yeah, she's like, all right, I'll graduate to a big hat later.
When she pulls the big hat out, that's when people will know that she's serious.
Yeah, when she wears the big hat, that's when you know she's going to be Cinderella 2024 champion.
It'll be like, uh-oh, the big hat. Yeah, but the dive off the stanchion was what I liked, and that was what I liked.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I went 3 stars. I kind of liked this a little bit more than I thought I would. I don't know why, but just nothing about this match screamed excitement to me. But we did get a cool post-match.
Oh, that is, you are totally right. As a mysterious person who sort of looked like, with the sort of, I don't know what color you would, tan face mask and the hair.
Did you think it was a Momo mask too? Sort of,
I thought it was a Momo mask. I was like, is this another Momo mask? And then I realized, oh no, it's just someone.
That's 100% what I thought.
Who revealed herself to be Mercedes, the IWGP Women's Champion, Mercedes Moné, who attacked her next challenger, Mayu Iwatani, after the match, and then revealed her blue hair and her face.
Yep. Yeah, no, it was cool seeing her pop up on this show that otherwise was fairly unnoteworthy.
I was also thinking, oh, I guess she's just in Japan for a couple weeks now.
Yeah,
I would assume
probably.
She's not flying back to America.
Yeah, I would assume she's out. Just got like an apartment or something.
Maybe she can go see all the big shows in Josie that are happening.
Maybe.
And train with the Tokyo Joshi folks, which I know she enjoys doing.
Go farming with Sendai girls.
That's right. The most important thing to learn, how to farm.
Yep.
The next match was a singles match. Tsuri defeating Konami in 10 minutes and 2 seconds. Kelly, what did you think of this match?
I thought this was good, but also incredibly disappointing because it should have been great, but it just wasn't. Konami is definitely a step slower than she should be, but that's just because she barely wrestles anymore. And it was a bummer. It was a bummer of a match. It was like, man, this was like the one thing on the show I was looking forward to, and it was good. That's it. It wasn't as good as I was hoping. It was good. It was a solid 3.5-star match that should have been a 4.25 at minimum.
Yeah, this was the moment in the show where I stopped taking notes because almost all of my notes were this match is fine / good. And that would be my only note in the match. And that was sort of my note for this match, which was this match was fine. I agree with you. Wish it would have been better. I thought it had the possibility to be better, but didn't happen.
Yeah.
The semi-main event of this show was the finals of the Cinderella tournament for 2023. Mirai going back to back, the first person ever to go back to back in the Cinderella tournament, defeating Mai
Cinderella
Sakurai
Fiesta
in...
Erasure.
Well, no, back to back. That wasn't back to back.
I thought it was back to back.
No, Mayus were like 4 years apart.
Oh.
The first consecutive years.
Okay.
I think. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe I'm totally wrong. Mirai becoming the 2-time Cinderella tournament champion, defeating Mai Sakurai in 13 minutes and 12 seconds. Kelly, I'll throw it to you again.
It was fine. My main takeaway from this was that Mirai is by far the weakest link in the Cinderella tournament lineage. And this past year has done nothing to make me think otherwise. In fact, I don't know, maybe I might view her lower than I did a year ago. I don't know. It was good. I just don't see it with Mirai. I think she's a good hand. I don't see any kind of main event anything in her, and I think this match showed why this was not the main event of the show and why this the whole Cinderella tournament has kind of just felt like an afterthought.
I mean, my biggest question is she wins last year, she loses her title challenge. It feels like she has to win this time.
Yeah. And she absolutely should not.
Well, she has to win. I'm assuming she's not beating the winner of Julia and Tom. Just because I'm assuming whoever comes out of that as the winner is not going to lose to Mirai.
No.
I guess if Saya beats Mina,
I guess,
then Mirai would be the winner, but I think that there's a chance that Mina wins.
Yes, I think Saya. Mina's the one to beat Saya.
And then you're not going to have Mirai beat her like a month later. That doesn't seem logical. And other than that, she's not going to challenge for... I mean, she could challenge for the IWGP Women's title.
And go up against
Mercedes, but that doesn't feel like a hot match to me, and it doesn't feel like something where the only reason they would take the title off Mercedes is if she has no more dates.
Yeah, but it sure does sound like a match that would be like fifth from the top on the Best of the Super Juniors finals.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think that she is firmly sort of sliding into that Himika, Mika sort of, oh, hey, you're around. We might do something with you once in a while. But she's now won the Cinderella tournament twice, but I don't know. Shrug.
The M in Stardom stands for Mirai.
The main event of the show was a best 2 out of 3 falls 8-person tag team match. The Donna Del Mundo quartet of Julia, Himika, Mika, and Tekla defeating the Cosmic Angels quartet of Mina, Shirakawa, Natsupoi, Tom Nakano, and Saki. 2 falls to 1 in 14 minutes and 43 seconds. And this, to me, really solidified the sort of row 2 vibes of the show. Obviously, this very much pushing the Julia and Tom title match that is coming up next weekend, which we will talk about shortly. Other than that, just once again, I hate to sound like a broken record, just a match to me.
Yeah, I think this was by far my favorite match of the show. I went 3 3/4 on it. I really thought they did a good job of furthering the main event feud here with Julia beating Tom and Tom beating Julia. I thought that was an interesting decision. And I also liked the finish of the match where Mika beat Natsupoi. It was kind of just throwing a little extra salt in the wound just to specifically beat Natsupoi, who left Donna Del Mundo to go hang out with the despicable Tom. So I thought they did a good job with storytelling in this match. I enjoyed it.
Well, that is everything for the Stardom Cinderella.
Oh wait, no. There's still stuff. There's a whole post match.
Oh well, go for it.
So after the match, Julia cut a promo and was like, "Haha, Tom sucks," and then everyone laughed at her and they left. And then Mina was like, "Hey, you know, they might be right. I'm leaving. I'm taking Waka with me." And Tom was like, "What? Waka, you're not going." And Waka was like, "Nope, I'm leaving. Bye." So then Mina officially split off from Cosmic Angels and took Waka with her. And then Tom was crying because her friends are leaving. And it's like, well, you did the same thing with Natsupoi. How's it feel now? And then Saori Ano showed up, and she was like, hey, guys, I guess I'll join with you. And they're like, cool, this is all right. And then they left, and they did the pose where they put their hands on their faces, and Saori did not do it. And then Tom was like, hey, you got to do this. And Saori's like, no, don't touch my arm. I have an injury here. And then they left, and that was the end of the show.
There you go. A great summary.
Did any of that happen? There. Did I just fanfiction it? Who knows? Who's to say? You know, also, I'm still not convinced that the Julia-Tom match doesn't end with Julia winning and then Himika destroying Julia while wearing a salmon jacket and cutting a I've got a lot left in the tank promo. I think that is an entirely possible thing that that could happen.
I'm going to say I don't think that that will happen. I'm not sure that Stardom will, is going to start doing what? Decades old WWE storyline tribute. Tributes.
But it would heat up Himika. And you could start like a new heel faction with her that would actually have some heat besides the cartoon bad guys. Like, it could be so good. They're not going to do it. I know.
She's retiring.
Yeah, but what if she's not?
She is.
What if,
she is
what if she's got a lot left in the tank, Taylor?
I think she does have a lot left in the tank, but I don't think she wants to empty the tank.
Oh.
I think she wants to keep the what's in her tank for herself. and not for you, Kelly.
Oh.
Specifically, not for you.
Damn it, Himika. What have I done?
Anyway, that was the Stardom show. But that was not the only show on April 15th. Tokyo Joshi also had their latest Corican Hall show, Stand Alone, in front of 620 fans there at Corican Hall. Kelly, what did you think of this show?
I thought it was a daring choice to name the show after the classic Godsmack song. So that was an interesting choice. And overall, I thought the show was fun.
I thought the show was great. I don't think it will at the end of the year, but I thought it was sort of a low-level show of the year contender.
Really? Wow. Okay.
In my opinion, yeah. Maybe it was that I was watching it live. I don't know. But I thought it was a super fun show and had a bunch of very good matches, you know, fun matches or very good matches on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it kicked off with a singles match, Moka Miyamoto defeating Kaya Toribami in 7 minutes and 31 seconds. Kelly, what did you think of this kickoff match of Stand Alone?
I thought they both looked kind of rough here. Like, I don't know why. It seemed like just something wasn't clicking, and this was a level below what I expect from these two. So I only went 2 3/4 on it. I came away fairly disappointed.
I thought it was pretty good. I thought that they sort of tried to do a fast-paced opening sequence. I think it was maybe a little bit too much for them because they had... It felt slightly sort of cooperative in that the moment that stuck out to me was sort of they're running the ropes and Moka bent over for Kaya to do her, like, roll over the back move. I don't know what the real name of that is.
I remember
and
that.
And I was like, why would you do, like, in kayfabe, why would you just bend down like that other than you're waiting for Kaya to do this move? But I thought other than that, it was a well-worked sequence. It was just one of those things where it was like, okay, that, you know, would have ideally come from some other reason, like you throw her off on the ropes and you're gonna backdrop her or something. But I thought it was a, you know, well worked match. I thought they both got an opportunity to shine. Moka getting another victory, sort of solidifying her move, her continued move up the card. You know, I thought it was like three stars. I wasn't crazy about it, but I thought it was a fun opening match.
Yeah, I don't think it was bad. It's just I expect better from them, you know?
The next match was a six-person tag team match. Haru Karashiro, Haruna Neko, and Yuki Aino defeating the Daisy Monkey duo of Riso Endo and Suzume, who were teaming with Runa Okuba in 10 minutes and 15 seconds. The big moment of the match has to be Arisa Endo doing a flip on a lariat from Haruna Neko. Like a big, like, New Japan style end of the match, like getting destroyed by a lariat, full 360 flip, which I thought was very funny. But
Stan
I thought
the
that
lariat
the rookies...
Neko.
I thought the rookies once again here looked, you know, fine. I didn't really have a lot of thoughts about them. I thought this was sort of just a decent match. I think it's very clear why Haru and Runa, you know, they're very young, obviously, but very clear why they are a little bit farther down the card than people like Toga and Shino, because they are very clearly sort of a step behind them, but of course they're much younger, so that makes sense. But I thought this was just sort of the get everyone on the card, traditional Tokyo Joshi match.
Yeah, I thought this was solid. Really, the thing that stood out to me most was that Haruna Neko matched her hair color to the new accents in her gear, and I thought that was a fantastic look.
It is one of those things I was thinking as they were sort of running through the card at the beginning that now there's so many of these rookies now that I'm like, these cards are really going to be packed. Like, they're going to be packed in a way, just because you've all of a sudden added, what, four or five new people all at once. Not anything negative, but I was just sort of like, oh, interesting, when thinking about that.
You got to get them reps, so you have to get them on the card too, for sure.
So I'm assuming we'll be seeing a lot more 6- and 8-man, 8-person tags on the undercard of these shows. The next match was an 8-person tag team match. The team of Maki Ito, Toga, Wakana Uehara, and Yuki Kamifuku defeating the foursome, the most famous foursome in all of Tokyo Joshi, the Up-Up Girls, Hikari Noah, Miyu Watanabe, Raku, and Shino Suzuki in 13 minutes and 22 seconds. I thought, I wrote in my notes, sort of thought this ruled. I thought it was really great. Maki Ito coming to the ring sounding like Tomiaka Hanma.
Oh my god.
In the beginning. And like Chris Brooks and Drew Parker on commentary, like burying her for losing her voice. Just a fun match. They also, you know, Raku was doing her stuff, and Hikari Noah comes in the ring and starts covering Wakana's mouth like she's trying to kill her. Which I also thought was very funny. But I thought everyone looked really good. I thought Wakana and Shino and Toga all got moments to shine and looked good. And, of course, Miyu Watanabe in a match looked great. Loved the, once again, the Dragon Sleeper swing that she did, which looks so great. And I just really dug it. It was like a match where I had a lot of fun. And I just enjoyed myself.
Yeah, this was really good. Love seeing the Up-Up Girls tag together. I'm really hoping now, seeing them on the Mania Weekend show and here, that they make it a more consistent thing. Like, that would be fun. I came away from this match super impressed with Shino Suzuki. I thought her closing stretch with Maki Ito was fantastic. Like, just a really great way to close the match, and she really kind of blew me away with there.
Yeah, I think it's clear why the three of them are here, sort of in this more featured match, because I thought they were all, I thought that, like I said, I thought they all had moments when I was like, oh, this is why, you know, they have something that doesn't just feel like, oh, they're rookies, this is their first handful of matches. Mm-hmm. You know, and obviously Shino getting put in up girls is a big deal. So I'm assuming they would want someone who isn't going to, you know, have to sort of putz around at the bottom of the card, because she has to be with the up girls in some manner.
Yeah.
You know, it can't be like, oh, here are three, you know, maybe not Raku, but here are three really prominent members of the roster and a fourth member who's like, doesn't do anything. So makes sense to me, but yeah, I thought they all looked very good.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy slab packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
The next match was a special match, the team of Hyper Misao and Shoko Nakajima defeating Himawari and Yuki Arai in 9 minutes and 2 seconds in a tag team match refereed by special referee SKE 48 member Shiori Aoki, a match that almost was much shorter than this, Kelly, except Aoki, the rookie ref, forgot to ring the bell to begin the match. So the initial pin, which happened, I believe, in about 3 seconds, did not count.
I thought this was a really just unique match in that the story of the match was built around the inexperience of the referee. And I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Yeah, my first note was I thought this was a lot of fun. And in a very, you know, we come on the show a lot with Hyper Misao matches and we're like, this was a Hyper Misao match. Like, they're very funny, but they're all very similar. This to me felt very different than that. Mm-hmm.
This was easy
really
to follow. Didn't need to understand dialogue to figure out what was going on. This was just the referee is inexperienced and you're off. I totally missed that she was part of SKE 48. So I just thought she was some random person that they're like, all right, she's gonna be our new referee. And so yeah, I thought they did a very good job of getting that story across.
Yeah, and I thought it was a lot of fun. Obviously the big moment, not ringing the bell at the beginning to start the match. I really liked the audience getting very into applauding for her doing the 5 count to break up moves, you know, doing 1, 2, 3, yeah, 4, and then they would break and everyone would be like, yeah. And then the other highlight was the quick pin exchange where she kept standing up and moving to the other side to count the pin very slowly, which then climaxed with her doing a cartwheel from one side of the ring to the other, which I found very interesting. But just a really, like, I was just having a great time.
Yeah.
And I thought this was really good, and I hope that Aoki comes back and has more matches.
Yeah, no, this was very fun. I enjoyed her a lot here in this role.
The first and last time I'll ever say about a match, and you know us on this show, we're often saying, get some referees off of matches.
Yeah.
The first time, and maybe last time, I'll ever say, oh, I hope I see this referee more.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe, I don't, maybe just have her replace Daichi. There we go.
There we go. The ultimate jumping bomb audio solve of all our problems. The next match was another tag team match. The what word do I want to use to describe? The beloved team, the beloved newly formed team of Max the Impaler and Palm Harajuku defeating Mihiro Kiryu and Yuka Sakazaki in 12 minutes and 36 seconds. This was another match, and this is probably why I think so highly of this show. Another match that I watched and just like had a great time. I really enjoyed it. I love the stuff. Obviously, the highlight of it was the stuff between Max and Palm. Love the finish with the super Palm to Justice, which looked great. And it's just, we all love Palm Harajuku, and I was happy to see this, and it was a lot of fun, and I thought the story that they told was really cool.
Yeah, this was my favorite match on the card. I had a really good time with this. I feel like this means that they have to get a title shot.
Well, they don't jump ahead. Don't jump ahead here, Kelly.
Okay, okay.
We'll talk about that shortly.
Okay. I think this might be the best that Kiryu has ever looked. I thought she was great here. And like, not in just like, oh man, she was doing crazy flips or whatever. She just looked more comfortable than I think she ever has. And it just made the match even better for me.
Well, Kelly, longtime listeners of the podcast will know that many months ago, I made the official decree on Mihiro that she was good. Yep. So another W for me in that I said it and I was right. I said it and I never said anything different in any other week. I've never changed my mind. But yeah, just another. It was funny because, I mean, I went 4 stars on this match just because I thought it was so fun. But it was a weird thing. Like at this point in the show, I was like, this show is so good. And so you were like, oh, I don't really see it as like a show of the year contender. And I'm like, that sort of makes sense to me. But I was having so much fun that I was just like, this is such a fun like thing. Even though these matches aren't like, oh, the greatest worked matches of all time. It's like the show flew by because I watched it live. And I was like, wow, this show is flying, flew by. I had a great time. I finished. I was like, yes, you know, you finish a show and you're like, I want to watch like another show.
Yeah.
Which sometimes is not the case. Sometimes you get to end of shows and you're like, okay, I need to do something else right now.
I need to go to bed.
Yeah. So I just thought it was a super enjoyable show to me.
Yeah. No, and it's like, that's what Tokyo Joshi is so great at. They just make these shows that are just so easy to digest. They fly by. They do fun stuff. There's a lot of variety in what you're seeing. Like, it's just, their shows are so easy to sit down and watch.
The semi-main event of this show was an international princess title match, the new champion Rika Tatsumi successfully defending her title against the debuting Vert Vixen, jumping bomb audio favorite Vert Vixen, in 10 minutes and 55 seconds. I thought that this wasn't blown away. I thought it was a solid match. My one major complaint, and this is sort of nitpicky a little bit, was on English commentary, it felt like they were really focusing on, oh, Vert Vixen, her knee is hurt, she can't put weight on the knee, but it felt like the match itself was not saying that. It felt like they were sort of like, oh, her knee is very bad, and what is she going to do? But she wasn't really selling it, and so it was a weird sort of mix of commentary saying one thing, but the match itself wasn't really saying that thing. And, you know, I enjoy Chris and Drew. I thought that they were a lot of fun and they sort of matched the vibe of the show of Tokyo Joshi. But it was just sort of a strange thing that distracted me, because every time they were like, oh, her knee is really hurt, and I look and it, you know, she was fine.
I think they were just trying to find a story in a match that really didn't have much of one. It was just, it was a very basic match. And I don't know. Vert Vixen lives on AEW Dark. And this is what that felt like to me. It was very much, this is the main event of Dark. And you get like a 11 minute long 3-star match. It was fine. It was whatever. Wrestlers need to stop being gamers. I don't need you yelling level up and game over. We already have enough of that.
Wow, Kelly coming. Who could expect Kelly coming out against gamers?
Yeah. In, well, you know,
episode 79 of Jumping Bomb Audio.
Yeah. And then the PlayStation knee pads, like it was a bit too much. Just too much gaming. There was no cosplay though, so I appreciate that.
That's right. Well, the main event of the show was the Princess of Princess title match, Mizuki successfully defending her newly won title, defeating Nao Kakuta in 15 minutes and 45 seconds. And Kelly, I'm fascinated, because earlier on you said the Palm Max tag match was your favorite match on the show. I'm fascinated to hear what you thought of this match.
I thought this was good. I went 3 3/4 on it. So I liked it, but I didn't see it as like an upper tier level, like main event. It was just it was a good main event. I thought the dynamic between these two was very interesting, in that they don't really hate each other, but there is a definitely high level of just like professional animosity there. And I think that was interesting, because that's something you don't see a ton in wrestling, because everything is always just like, oh, we're competing, or it's like they went to my house and invaded my lawn and now I have to kill him. But this was just like, man, I don't know. She's mean sometimes. I don't really like her that much. And it came across well in the match that they just kind of just like, you know what? I don't like this broad. I'm going to smack her upside the head a little bit harder than normal. And so I thought that was fun. That was an interesting approach to the story. Overall, good match. I didn't feel like it ever kicked into like a high gear that I would hope for out of a Tokyo Joshi main, but good nonetheless.
Well, I really liked it. I almost went 4 1/4, but I ended up going 4 just because I thought the finish was slightly underwhelming. But I just thought it was a really good, hard-hitting match. I thought they hit each other very hard. I thought that they were ambitious with some of the stuff. There was the Mizuki. She tried to sort of like jump off of Nao's shoulders to do a foot stomp, which didn't quite work, but I sort of got what they were going for. I don't know. I just really liked it. It's funny because I'm only at 4 stars, 1/4 star off of you, but I thought it was very good. I saw some people, I think, that were slightly higher than that, but I just thought it was a really well worked match. I thought, like I said, they really didn't feel like they were holding anything back. Hitting each other hard. So it was something I enjoyed. And, you know, I look back and, you know, the semi-main I thought was fine. But, you know, between the 8-woman tag, the Hyper Masao match, Palm and Max, and then this main event, I had a bunch of stuff that was either like 3 3/4 or 4 stars for like 4 of the last 5 matches, which is why I went, oh, this is actually very good. I think especially for a show that, looking at it on paper, for the first time, you sort of look at it and you're like, it's not a show that jumps out to you as a show that would be, I was sort of thinking, okay, this will be a fine show. There might be maybe one good match. And I ended up really enjoying myself.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a everything was good at minimum kind of show.
Yeah, so I think instead of being a victim of expectations, I think it benefited by the my expectations that it was just going to sort of be a fine show.
Mm-hmm.
But that was Tokyo Joshi's standalone Corican Hall show. What else has been going on in Joshi? Most notably, the IWGP Women's Championship was defended at Sakura Genesis. Mercedes Moné, as we mentioned, retaining her title, defeating Azumi and Hazuki. This was a match I thought was really good. I went 4.25. Kelly, what did you think of this match?
I liked it a lot. I went 4. I thought it was a really good kind of showcase of the high-speed style on a New Japan show.
Yeah, I thought, of course, Azumi and Hazuki looked great. And I thought Mercedes sort of kept up with them in a style that is very, very sort of specifically defined. And there are people who are very good at it, but it's not a style that a ton of people do in terms of the high speed style. So I thought Mercedes kept up very well. I was very confused about Mercedes pinning Azumi and not Hazuki, because I thought that was the whole point of having Hazuki in the match.
Yeah, that was weird.
But I guess not. But very good. I would say definitely seek it out. It's definitely worth your time. Also, Azumi then, fresh off her defeat on the 14th, defeating Saki Kashima to make defense number 11 of the high-speed title. So who's to say when she will relinquish that belt?
Saki, this is why you should have shot for the top belt. You lost anyway, but you could have rolled up Julia and won.
Could have done it. Not too much else happening in the world of Joshi. Sendai Girls had a show on the 16th. Not much going on there. Benny Okawa will not be returning to Ice Ribbon. Another week where I'm coming on an episode of Jumping Bomb Audio and talking about someone leaving Ice Ribbon. So
yeah,
not happy to say. And Kelly has a report from Gleet.
Over in Gleet on the show from the 12th, Unagi Sayaka defeated Michiko Miyagi, thus exiling Miyagi from Gleet. I'm not entirely sure if Miyagi is completely leaving the company or if she'll come back as like Cassandra Miyagi or something. I would assume, I think she is just leaving, but I'm not entirely certain on that. But yeah, we'll have to see if she pops up somewhere else and what Unagi's future in this company is, because it looks like she's planning on taking some of the younger wrestlers under her wing.
Miyagi's story, when it's all said and done, whenever that happens to be, is one of the more fascinating stories.
It really is.
Joshi of the past decade or so. Just a very bizarre career to me. Just
bouncing around everywhere.
From Sendai Girls, went to Stardom, and was seemingly almost unanimously, despised by the fans. And then has sort of bounced around, ended up in Gleet, and now maybe gone from that promotion. So, yeah, very weird. But what is coming up? And let me tell you, there is a lot of shows coming up. We are getting close to Golden Week, so we'll have a lot of promotions running bigger shows. But the biggest show of all in the next 2 weeks, Stardom's All-Star Grand Queendom, coming up, the big show that they have been focused on now for a while. And the card is as follows. The opening match will be the traditional big show, Yokohama Rumble. The only wrestler so far who has been announced for the match is Momoe Nakanishi. Kelly, give me a prediction with only one wrestler announced. Who's going to win the Yokohama Rumble?
I'm going the super strong Stardom Machine.
That's interesting because I was going to go Sexy Dynamite Princess.
That's what I was going to go, but I could not remember her name.
Sexy Dynamite Princess, or I'll give myself two. I'll give myself an out. Or her civilian alter ego. I'll say that.
Okay. Who's that?
Well, I don't want to dox Sexy Dynamite Princess.
Is it Tracy Williams?
Yes, it's Hot Sauce Tracy Williams. No, it's Hoshi Tango.
Oh, of course.
Other matches on the show, Fuwa-chan will make her return to Stardom, teaming with Hazuki against Utami and Miyu Amasaki. Tekla will make an interesting team with the rest of Club Venus, Mariah May, Xena, and Jesse to wrestle against the Oedo Tai Quartet of Natsuko Tora, Momo Watanabe, Ruaka, and Saki Kashima. Tekla spending a lot of time shit-talking Club Venus, so this will be an interesting teaming here.
Yeah.
And maybe the match, if not the match I'm looking most forward to, the match I think is most likely to steal the show. Mei Suruga will team with Azumi to take on Starlight Kid and Mei Sierra, the former Mei Hoshizuki from Marvelous, in a tag team match. And I think that this will be very good.
Yeah, no, that should be awesome.
Really a match designed for Kelly and I, with
pretty
four
much
people Kelly and I really enjoy, on a big show, all in one match.
Yeah, no, this is great. More of this.
Then the Himeka retirement road continues with the biggest match and the final Stardom match for Himeka, taking on her longtime tag team partner, Maika, in a singles match, Himeka versus Maika. And if Kelly's dreams come true, maybe Himeka will pull out the victory and unretire herself,
you know,
after this match.
She might. You never know. You never know.
Then for the tag titles, the champions Nanae Takahashi and Yu will defend against Cinderella tournament winner Mirai and Cinderella tournament semifinalist Ami Sorei. Kelly, do you think we have new tag team champions after this match?
That seems very possible, I think. It would make sense. And I wouldn't mind it. The Takahashi and Yu tag title run hasn't been lighting the world on fire.
What if Mirai won the tag title and then said, oh, I won the Cinderella tournament, but I just won a title, so I don't need another title.
Yeah, what if she, before the match, she's like, I'm using this match for my title shot. Thank you.
Next on the card, the big six-person tag title match, the Prominence Trio of Risa Sera, Suzu Suzuki, and Kurumi Haragi will take on the Restart Trio of Kairi, Natsupoi, and Sayori Ano. Should be a very good match.
Hell yeah. This card fucking rocks and really feels like it was made for us.
It's a big show card, and it feels, well, maybe not the first few, maybe not, you know, I don't know, the Oedo Tai 8-person tag, but
yeah, but they're doing some fun with at least the Mina's women and putting Tekla in there. Like that's fun,
that's
at least.
But this is
shit. The next match is UWF style. Like, come on, that's for me.
And it is Shuri against Chihiro Hashimoto, and it can only be finished by submission, knockout, or ref stoppage. Kelly, how do you think this match ends?
Probably time limit draw.
Oh, I was going to say double knockout. I think it's very clear it's not going to end cleanly.
Yeah, no, I think, yeah, double knockout is probably very likely in, like, a double headbutt or something.
Or maybe it's a, one of them has the other in a submission. Their shoulders are down. The ref is counting to three. One, two, and then the other person starts tapping out. And so no, it's like, what, one, two, stops, three, tap, 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 tap.
Daichi stops counting because he's like, wait, you can't win by pinfall.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. There's no pinfalls.
But no, that makes sense, though. I think that works perfectly. So you get the visible three count, even though, and the referee's like, wait, I'm dumb.
Maybe they bloody each other and the refs say, oh, we can't have this.
That could be, yeah.
Ref stoppage.
Throws a towel on their faces.
Yeah. The next match, our first of three singles title matches, is for the IWGP Women's Championship. Mercedes Moné, the champion, will defend against the Stardom icon Mayu Iwatani. Kelly, do you think Mayu pulls out the victory here?
I don't, but I kind of wish she would. Like, I don't think Mercedes' run is bad, but I don't know. I think it kind of sucks to have Mayu lose after she was not able to be the inaugural champion.
It's very weird to me in that this almost feels like it's not a... Like, the IWGP Women's Championship has not felt connected to Stardom at all, even though it's had Stardom wrestlers in it. It's just like a weird thing where I'm like, oh yeah, I guess this is a, I don't know.
Yeah, it kind of just exists in its own little world.
Yeah. The semi-main of this show, Saya Kamatani will defend her Wonder of Stardom title against Mina Shirakawa. Kelly, make the official decree. Does,
Mina.
Is this the match where Saya loses the title?
This is it. This is when the reign of terror ends. Mina brings in a new era of women.
Well,
breathe
well, we will...
with the women.
Oh boy. Okay, and the main event of this show for the World of Stardom title, the feud reignited. Julia will defend the title against Tom Nakano. Kelly, what happens here?
Hopefully blood. Let Tom run the razor. Let Julia do it. You let him bleed on the fucking press conference. Let him do it in the match. I want a bloodbath. And I also want Julia to beat the despicable Tom.
Wow. Maybe they saw the Joey Janela spring break. Maybe they saw Maki Ito.
Yeah, maybe they're like, hey, this is all right.
And they said, if they can do it, we can do it.
Yeah, I hope that's what happened.
But we will have to see what happens.
Who do you think comes out winning?
I think that I think Tom, I don't know. My gut says Tom, but I'm like, Tom won the last.
Yeah, Tom won the hair match. I think it's time for
but
Julia.
But then the hair match
Tom
felt like
her.
It didn't really. But then it felt like that hair match didn't even really matter because Julia was like, I like having short hair. This is cool. So maybe, I don't know, maybe Tom says, I finally got you with this and I took the title. And I'm like,
and Julia's
okay.
Like, you know what? I never liked having a belt anyways. It can't hold up my pants.
And I guess if it's not going to be like, do they have someone ready to come in and win the title? Or is this another, like, Julia's gonna hold, like everyone has been doing, Julia's gonna hold it for a year?
I think Julia's gonna have the belt for a long while.
I don't know. Well, that's why we
unless
the shows.
Unless Himika is the one that beats Julia.
All right, moving on. speaking of Himeka, on the 28th, Bushiroad will be having a joint show with pro wrestling Wave, Jumbo Forever, which only has one match announced so far, which will be the retiring Himeka against Sakura Hirota. So the rest of that card will be announced. And then the 29th and the 30th starts Stardom's Golden Week show. Speaking of that, on the 30th, Seedling has a show at Corican Hall to kick off Golden Week. The main event of that show, Arisa Nakajima tagging with Takumi Aroha to take on Ayame Sasamura and Riko Kaiju. That should be fun. Also, Asuka and Makoto tagging in the semi-main to take on the Noah superstars, Natsu Samire and Maya Yukihi. So a fun show there. Oz has a big show also on the 23rd. Three title matches there. Momoko Hanazono will defend her three-way title against Kaori Yoniyama and Kohaku. The tag titles will be up for grabs. Sona Kokado and Ryo Mizunami taking on Jaguar Yokota and Mayumi Ozaki. And in the main event, Itsuki Aoki will challenge for the Oz Openweight title against Akino. Tokyo Joshi, Kelly, you said it earlier in the show that Max and Palm should get a tag title match. Well, good news. You don't even have to wait a full week. And Mizuki and Yuka Sakazaki will defend the Princess Tag titles in Tokyo Joshi against Max the Impaler and Palm Harajuku on April 22nd. Also on that show will be Vert Vixen going up against Moka Miyamoto, another big singles match for Moka. Ice Ribbon will have a show on the 29th featuring an Ice Infinity tag title match. Totoro Satsuki will defend against Ibuki Hoshi. Diana has a Corican Hall show on the 29th. And Marvelous has a show on the 22nd featuring Asuka versus Mio Momono. And Kelly, what is coming up in the world of Choco Pro?
They've got two shows coming up that are crossovers with Deadlock Pro Wrestling on the 25th and the 27th. The 25th show is headlined by Violence is Forever taking on CDK. We'll also have Emi Sakura and Kaori Oniyama taking on Miyuki Takase and Haruka Umasaki. And then Mei Suruga and Ryo Mizunami versus Chie Koshikawa and Kaho Kobayashi. So those three matches should all be fun. I think also on that show is Rina Yamashita versus Bali Anaki. That should be very good as well. And then on the 27th, the only match that I know of so far was just announced yesterday, I believe, and that is Mei Suruga versus Arisu Endo, and that should be very good.
So that is everything coming up in the next 2 weeks. We'll have plenty to cover on the next show, highlighted by All-Star Grand Queendom, which will be a very big show, but that is everything. Kelly, what do you have to say for yourself at the end of another episode of Jumping Bomb Audio?
The Mario movie was good. Had a good time with it. Didn't challenge me in any way. But it was exactly what it should have been. Perfect for children. Taylor, did you see the Mario movie?
I did not, and I'm shocked after you buried gamers earlier in the episode. You're coming out here talking about the Mario movie.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't mind gamers. I just don't want my wrestlers to be outwardly gamers. I want them to be wrestlers. I don't want Adam Cole coming out here dressed like Master Chief. I don't need people yelling level up and game over. And it's like, wow, you play video games. It's like, Jesus. All right, cool. We know that. How about you wrestle a fucking match? Get more vertical, maybe. You're looking real horizontal at the end of that match, let me tell you something.
Wow. All right. Well, I guess...
Shooting. I'm Kelly, shooting. It's shoot week.
Is that a recommendation for to see the Mario movie or not?
Yeah, no, it is. It was good. It was exactly what it should have been. Chris Pratt's voice is nowhere near as bad as the trailers led me to believe. It's It's fine. It should be better, but it's fine. This is just the reality of big budget animated movies now, where you just need to have celebrities doing the voices instead of voice actors. He was definitely better than Seth Rogen as Donkey Kong, because Seth Rogen did not change his voice at all. That was just Seth Rogen.
Well, a resounding plug there by Kelly to conclude the episode.
Have you ever seen the 1993 Mario movie?
I have.
That movie's fucking wild.
Yes. As much of the 90s were.
That's such a horny movie. And it's got the incredibly realistic Yoshi that rules.
But that is all we have for this episode of Jumping Bomb Audio. So for Kelly, I am Taylor, and we will talk to you in 2 weeks' time here on Jumping Bomb Audio. Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. I need to end this recording now. This is my job. Oh no, hopefully it goes well.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.